snowplow parents.
Okay.
And you've probably heard that phrase or that term before. It used to be helicopter parents, now it's snowplow parents. I think in education, I see this a lot, and I've been in it over 25 years, so I've seen the changes. Parents these days are trying to remove every obstacle from their kids. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end, and of course I'm a dad, and I'm sure I was guilty of it. At the end, it doesn't do kids necessarily a lot of favors. Mm-hmm. I see students we have kids who develop anxiety issues and they don't know how to problem solve. They don't know how to socialize because a lot of times parents just swoop in and solve every problem.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite like that growing up. It was a lot of problem solving that we did on our own. So I don't know. Finding the balance, I think, is mm-hmm. what's missing today.
Yeah. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Aaron Pena. Aaron is the superintendent at Burnet Consolidated ISD, which is in Burnet, Texas. Aaron, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Aaron, tell us a little bit about what's going on in Burnet. It sounds like many places in Texas, you guys are growing.
Yeah, absolutely. We are in the beautiful hill country here in the middle of central Texas, and lots of people use our area as a destination area. We have a lot of folks come to Burnet, Texas, and the surrounding area to retire. It's kind of interesting with the school district, though, because for years, people mistakenly thought that the school district was growing. The area is growing, but for a while, the school district had been stagnant or even declined a couple of years. Until recently, we're starting to see the growth in students starting to come back up. And so we're in that kind of awkward situation where we hadn't been growing, but we're about to start. And so now we're trying to figure out how fast the growth will come, exactly when it will come, and also what side of the district or where it'll come, because our district spans 700 square miles. And so we're geographically spread quite wide, especially east to west. And so we're trying to just, make the best predictions that we can and do the best we can in planning for the future.
So how many students do you guys have right now?
Currently, we're just over 3,200, about 3,240. Last year, we've gone up about 40 kids from last year. And so we're starting to see that growth. But the prior year, we had been in decline. And so we're really excited to see the growth. And we're sure it'll continue. But of course, as you can imagine, it comes with its challenges as well.
Of course. Yeah. And so I love the fact that you're already looking to the future. And it sounds like you guys are doing some things to help with creating a culture within your school district to be prepared for that. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So we're going through a lot of change. Obviously, the biggest change probably for this school district is with me. I am new to the area. I've been here actually a year and a half now. But for most folks who were born and raised here, that's still very, very new. And so I've brought a lot of change just with how I work and how I kind of view the job of a school district. And so we're going through physical changes right now. We're looking at all of our facilities. We're making sure that our existing facilities are up to par and doing well with safety and just our learning environments. But then so that whenever it's time to build new facilities, we've kind of done what we've needed with our existing facilities. So there's those changes that are coming, and that's exciting. But something you don't necessarily see off the bat is cultural change. One of the things that I've noticed here in BCISD is we tend to be quite bureaucratic in our approach to things. And again, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Bureaucracy has its place, and it's meant to bring a lot of structure and kind of delineating roles and responsibilities and those kind of things. And it really certainly works well for, you know, government and the military. But for a school district, I have found that making the shift from a primarily bureaucratic type of organization to what Peter Senge coined years ago, a learning organization, is really beneficial to not only the students in the end, but to the teachers, the folks who are in the system. Just makes for a much more distributed leadership kind of environment. And that's what my hope is for BCISD. And that's if I can leave a legacy when I'm ready to retire one of these days, that would be it. That's my hope.
So how are you, what kind of steps are you taking to help create an atmosphere for that shift? Because as you and I both know, people do not like change. And so, and I get it. You've been there a little time. You've got to, when you're in a new position, it's like, you kind of got to get your feet wet and figure out what's going on. And then, you know, once people trust that you're not going to be here and gone, right, then you can kind of start. So what kinds of things are you doing to help to make that change?
Well, so last year was my first complete school year here. And I did kind of what's typical when a new superintendent comes on board. I did a lot of listening, a lot of observing, kind of getting the lay of the land. And one of the things that I kept hearing when talking to not only current teachers, but teachers or staff members who were leaving, and they would come and talk to me, because people are really, really in love with the school district and just have its best interests at heart. And so I would talk to folks. And one of the things that I kept hearing were phrases like, if you say too much, you may get a target on your back, or, you know, things like that. It just had me really kind of wondering what's going on. And I started discovering that there was a bit of a culture of fear with teachers, with folks who may have really good ideas or may want to perhaps challenge the status quo or even want to problem solve. They would tend to kind of sit back and stay quiet because that just wasn't the culture. You know, the culture I learned right away was and still is in a lot of ways that you kind of stay in your lane. You know, You don't get out of your lane. You stay, keep your head down, you do your job. And the directives and the direction comes from the top. And I'm not used to that.
Right.
That's not how I've led in the past. That's not how I, when I was a brand new principal, I had a lot of freedom from my superintendents, from the organizations in the districts where I was. And so I really thrived in that autonomy. And so I want that for our folks. So there was a lot of that. We did a climate survey at the end of the year after, again, a lot of just listening, talking with people, conversations. We went ahead and did a climate survey. And sure enough, there was no surprise. The results showed a lot of the same things that I had already been hearing about and learning. A lot of fear, a lot of distrust, just a large separation between the leadership and the rest of the folks doing the job. And so obviously, as a leader, you see that and you think, oh my goodness, this is not the way successful school districts are run, and
right.
We've got to make some changes.
Right.
And so we've been on that. I've been doing some practical things since the survey results have come about, and we're seeing some movement. Our mascot is a bulldog, and I can be a bulldog about things, especially when
That's
it comes
good.
Respecting teachers as professionals. I'm going to be a bulldog about that. So we're going to get there, but I'm also going to be patient and move at an appropriate pace, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. And you, what is the word I want to say? You reward that, right? Reward those people instead of feeling, you know, when you have those brave ones that are willing to step out, you know, you give them the opportunity and then they do step out. It's like, yay, right? Celebrate those wins as they come.
Yes. Yeah, we should. And I can do that as a superintendent, but I'm only one person. And I've discovered very quickly that it's the system that needs to almost have that attitude, if a system can have an attitude, you know, but the people in the system need to have that attitude of celebrating people who want to speak up. They have ideas, they want to share, they want to join in the tackling problems and coming up with ideas. And it hasn't always been celebrated, but we're getting there. And I'm doing some practical things that I can talk about if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear about it. Absolutely.
So one of the things that came back from the survey was that people would like for us, the leadership, to take a look at just the red tape, things that kind of bog people down. You know, certain things take longer than perhaps maybe they should. And of course, when you're new to a system, when you're new to a district, you can't help but see those things
right
everywhere, mm-hmm. right? You're like, oh mm-hmm. man, why do we do this particular right. thing this way? And it could be more efficient this other way. And so I was trying to make some change, but I discovered quickly that, you know, it can't just be me. Again, I've got to teach the people within the system if this is going to be true cultural change and not just Pena is just, you know, mandating all this stuff and we'll see how long it lasts. If it's going to be a true systemic change, it's got to be everybody doing it. So I gave out an assignment to my leadership team, my cabinet, that by the following month, this was at the beginning of the year, the following month, I want everybody to bring at least one example of some kind of a bureaucratic red tape type of thing that we have improved, that for the end user, it's going to make their life a little better. And usually the end user is either the teachers or the kids.
Right, right.
That was very weird, I'm sure, for the folks here. Not weird for me, because that's just kind of how I'm always thinking that way. Although, you know, the thing that I noticed in that little exercise is the folks who are the most uncomfortable were the folks who had been here for a little bit.
Mm.
It's like I hired a couple of new people onto the leadership team throughout last year, and it was not an issue for them. I mean, they had a list of things like, oh, right. We're doing this and we're doing this, and which was really neat. And so again, it was just encouraging the other folks, the folks who had been here. And I was talking to one of my leadership team members, and she was kind of struggling, kind of like what to come up with. And again, I mean, she's great. She just needed some encouragement because I reminded her of when she first arrived to the district, you know, that lens that she had and seeing those, the things that just are slow. Mm-hmm. And so she got it and came up with, you know, several things that we could adjust quickly and just make things better for people. So that was one exercise. The next exercise that I have going on now that I gave an assignment to all of the instructional leadership team, from the cabinet down to all the principals and the coordinators and those folks, they have to come ready to discuss by our next meeting, which is coming up, actually, something that is going to make us more effective or efficient that has bubbled up from teachers. So in other words, again, the distributive leadership, an idea or something that's come up from the teachers up, and then they have then taken we're doing something with it, with that idea. And I tell them, if you don't have any example that you can pull, and it has to be recent. If you don't have an example, then I ask the folks, what can you do? They mm-hmm. kind of stared at me, like, oh, we don't know. It's like, ask people.
Right.
Talk to people. Get out there, talk to your teachers. And so I'm excited to see what comes up. And I intend for those exercises to be a little bit uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
because changing a culture, you know, I think you might've mentioned earlier, moving people's cheese, right? It's
right.
It's not always the most comfortable exercise, but it's worth it in the end. So I don't mind if my folks feel a little uncomfortable, the leadership, we should be stretched. We should be challenged. And so I'm trying to do that. And in the last another practical thing that we're doing is I'll send a newsletter out to parents and staff, but then I send one out to teachers that kind of goes along with it every month. And I'm just touching on this topic, different angles of this moving from a culture of compliance, right? Everybody does what they're told, top down directives, towards a commitment type of culture where, man, everybody is in this to change kids' lives, to better kids' lives, and we're willing to give it all that it takes, and we're creative and we're innovative. So I'm explaining that stuff, but then I give them a link to just fill out a form and just give any questions that they have. They come straight to me. Any questions, any ideas, any ways we can be better. The first month, which was just this past couple of months ago this year, I just got three.
Oh.
I was so disappointed. Like, oh, but again, that's our culture. People don't ask questions. But again, we answered questions. One team, our pre-K team, asked a really good question. We had an additional middle and end of year assessment that was on top of their already beginning middle and end of year assessment. And you know, with pre-K, they're all like one-on-one assessments. They take
forever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why are we doing this? This is extra. We need instructional time. So that was perfect. Oh, I can use this one. And so we've gone through and they're meeting and they're discussing on how to streamline some things. And so I think people are going to be encouraged that you're not going to get in trouble for one, you know, Superintendent is not going to let you get in trouble if you're asking questions, if you're coming up with ideas. And then we're just encouraging people to be thinkers and to be strategists, to be problem solvers along with the leadership. It's not just us who have the titles who can think of all the things that are going to be good for the district.
Occupational therapy shouldn't be one more thing on your plate. It should be a solution. Lighthouse Therapy offers school-based occupational therapy services that actually work for you and your staff. Our OTs have an average of 16 years of experience in schools, and they support everything from handwriting to fine motor to sensory integration. And you can choose from three different service models, whether it be virtual, hybrid, or in-person. It's OT that fits your workflow without the chaos. Visit lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together to learn more. And it's freeing, you know, it really is freeing when you give people the opportunity to talk about the things without fear of reprisal, you know, because that's kind of what you're talking about. It's just like, I remember when I was with a company, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before, the school had changed the minutes on the IEP and I didn't know it. And I should have known, I should have checked it, but I didn't. And the quarter came and it was time for progress reports. And I went back and I was filling out my stuff and I noticed that the minutes had changed and I had been delivering 45 minutes and it was 30 minutes. And I'd done it for probably 6-8 weeks, you know, so I had way over delivered. And of course I was like mortified. Oh my gosh, I did this. This is so terrible. And so me being the honest person that I am, I let my supervisor know and I'm like, I'm so sorry this happened. I let the school know. I'm like, I over-delivered. I didn't know you guys had changed the minutes. And it was odd for him to be 45 minutes a week when it's normally 30. And, you know, and they did. They changed him to 30, but they didn't tell me. And I didn't. It was just one of those, you know, it was just, and it was truly my fault. I mean, I took responsibility for it. But the reaction of my supervisor and the reaction of the company that I work for was so mean-spirited and negative and awful. I mean, I was afraid to open my emails because I was afraid, again, somebody else was going to be yelling at me for something. I could have just swept it under the rug, right? Could have just let it go and just, you know, changed what I was doing, but move forward. And the interesting thing was the school was like, oh, it's okay, Janet. It's okay. We know you wouldn't do that on purpose. They were of the mind, okay, well, moving forward, just continue. I said, do you want me to like cut his minutes short? Which would not have been great for that child, but I would have if that's what they wanted me to do because I had over-delivered. And they're like, no, just start 30 minutes going forward and we'll do that. That was what I expected. And yet I, from the company that I was working for, well, you're going to have to pay that time back and the school's going to be angry with us. And how could you do this? And, you know, it's like, and it, what that did to me is it shut my mouth. I'm never going to give you any idea again. So that's kind of like what you're climbing a fence, trying to, you know, climbing a hill, climbing a mountain, trying to get people to give you something when they've probably experienced some of that. So, you know, giving them the opportunities and showing them that it's okay. It is a battle that you're fighting, right?
It is. And that's a perfect example of the kind of things that happen every day to people. And exactly like you described, it pushes you into just that compliance kind of a mindset. Like, I'll just tell me what to do. I'll just do what I'm told. And I'm not going to think. I'm not going to get out of the box. I'm not going to innovate. I'm not going to try to go the extra mile. And people, leaders like that don't realize, I don't think, what they're doing.
They don't.
But that they're doing a disservice to the organization, because it could be so much greater if everybody is a thinker. But the problem, it's not a problem. I mean, it's a good thing, but you have to be okay with people failing. You know,
right.
People are going to make mistakes.
Absolutely.
And sometimes, you know, I mean, gosh, you hear of all the, you know, the people, in Silicon Valley and just different industries, you know, the failures that people go through when they eventually invent something truly great. You're going to hit a wall a little bit. And if your organization, if your leaders, if people are keep encouraging you, you're just going to fly. And so, yeah, we're trying. And it starts with the leadership.
It does. It absolutely
gotta get them on board.
Yeah. And you know, what it did for me, it was a valuable lesson for me to go, when I'm in leadership and because I've always loved managing people, is acknowledge, okay, there was a mistake. We get it. You made a mistake, but you were honest about it. And what I've studied and what I've learned since then is, when you say to, you give people the opportunity, exactly what you're talking about, give them the opportunity to fail, but be honest about that failure, they're going to tell you way before and be more honest with you than if you yell at them or if you send negative and just, you know, battered. I just felt battered. I just felt battered by this company. I don't work for them anymore, obviously. And I'm still telling this story, and that was probably 10, 15 years ago, you know, whatever. I don't know the exact, but a long time ago. But it was so traumatic that it was like, it changed my whole perspective of, I want my people to know that if they make a mistake, if they come to me and they say, gosh, I want to be honest with you. I don't want to sweep it under the rug, because if they're sweeping it under the rug, that just, you know, that's just your little molehill is going to be a mountain and you're not going to know, and you can't fix it, right? You can't, if it's broken, you can't fix it if no one's telling you. And that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to give your people the opportunity to say, hey, you know, we haven't, oops, see, I talk with my hands and then I hit my microphone. Sorry about that, people. But if you give them the opportunity and show them, but you're going to have to do it consistently, right? You have to consistently say to them, Aaron, that this is okay. You know, we know it's not going to be perfect. We know you're not going to be perfect, but nobody in leadership is going to hold it against you for trying. So keep trying, keep stepping up, keep stepping into what you're doing. And ultimately, as you and I both know, who's going to win? The kids, right? Your district, your parents. So kudos to you for fighting that battle. And it's a tough thing, because it's like trying to turn a cruise ship on a dime. It doesn't work that way. You have to like make incremental changes in order to get there.
I know, absolutely. And one of the things I have to remind myself is, the culture that we have now wasn't built overnight.
No.
And, and we're not going to change it overnight either. I get impatient. I do.
Yeah, I hear you.
I have to remind myself. I like, oh man, you know, if I don't feel that they're being respected as the professionals that they are, it's not something that just goes against a strategy of mine. It goes against a value of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, really bothers me. And I have to watch it. You know, I've got to even give the folks in leadership some grace the room to also make mistakes too, but mm-hmm. we're not going to go backwards. We're going to keep moving.
Yeah.
I had to tell some leaders the other day, and I've done other practical things, like I've written little articles or done things where we kind of come together as a team and we discuss kind of this is my philosophy for the leadership here in BCISD. And I had to tell a couple of folks, you're going to have to get on board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't have this philosophy where, you know, teachers can be respected, teachers have ideas, we need to listen, you know, mm-hmm. and have dialogue. And we're not just quick to just think of all the reasons why, oh, no, this idea can't work. No, this, we have to say no to this or that. And sometimes you have to say no. Mm-hmm. You can always have dialogue and be open. And it teaches the folks who bring forth an idea, even if it's not the best idea, maybe, just that communication, you can teach them to formulate even better ones next time into the future. But when my leadership team is directly counter to that, I'm not going to make it comfortable for them.
You've got to make it uncomfortable for them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I'm a Christian, as I think you know. James 1:19 is, and it's like the thing that I like have been for the last year and a half trying to like get into my psyche all the time is be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, right? Yeah. Because it's so easy to fly off the handle and be mad, you know, but when you take this step back and you listen, and you give people the opportunity to speak. And I'll tell you, 4 seconds, that's all it takes. 4 seconds before, this is a speech therapist to me coming out. How, you know, if you can close your mouth for 4 seconds, somebody's going to get uncomfortable and talk because nobody likes that silence. And it only takes 4 seconds for a conversation to get uncomfortable when there's silence. And it is an amazing strategy to just zip it and give them an opportunity. Plus, I love the fact that you are doing this podcast. You are here being very transparent with your desire to allow your team to be successful, and you want this change for them, and you want this for Burnett. You want it for your community. You want it for your teachers. And this is you being as transparent as you can be, because this is public. We're gonna put this out there. It's gonna be a couple of months. It is October 1st right now, but by December, this is gonna be out there, and you're gonna have an opportunity. They're gonna see it. You're putting your money where your mouth is. You're talking about the things. Teachers in Burnett, your superintendent cares about you, and how great is it that he is willing to fight this battle for you in a way that is going to make it better for you and for your students and for your parents and for your community. So keep up the battle, Aaron. It is a battle that you're going to win. I know you're going to win. So keep it up.
Thank you. I sure will.
So one last question I always ask, I don't always, but I try to ask this question. And if you could, now you can't say money, and I know you can't change the culture, so we're not going to talk about the culture, but if there was one other thing in your world that you could just miraculously fix and never have to worry about it again, what would that one thing be?
Man, okay. snowplow parents.
Okay.
And you probably heard that phrase, that term before. It used to be helicopter parents, now it's snowplow parents. I think in education, I see this a lot, and I've been in it over 25 years, so I've seen the changes. Parents these days are trying to remove every obstacle from their kids' lives. And I think at the end, and of course I'm a dad, and I'm sure I was guilty of it. At the end, it doesn't do kids necessarily a lot of favors. Mm-hmm. I see students who, we have kids who develop anxiety issues, and they don't know how to problem solve. They don't know how to socialize, because a lot of times parents just swoop in and solve every problem.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite like that growing up. You know, like, it was a lot of problem solving that we did on our own. So I don't know, finding the balance, I think, is what's missing today.
Yeah. You can't fix it all.
Yeah. You can't have absentee parents, but, but you also can't swoop in and just fix every little thing for little Johnny and little Susie.
Yeah, before it was turnkey, right? We were turnkey kids. Like, you got home and you turned that key and there wasn't a parent there. You had to do it. Yeah. And for me, going back even another generation, and we've talked about this before, is like, you know, we drank out of the water, the hose. And, you know, it's like, it's 10 o'clock. Do you know where your kids are? Because we were out. You had to get out of the house and be gone and entertain yourself until mom called at six. And boy, at 6 o'clock, you better be there for dinner.
Be home when that street lamp turns off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. And it is. It feels like, you know, it's like we had the parents who were just trying to survive. And there still are parents that are trying to survive. But sure. Then you've got the parents now who's like, they don't let their kids. They don't want their kids to have any problems. You know, it's fix them all, right? So I agree with you. It's a balancing act. And being a parent and figuring it out and doing it is there's, they don't come with a manual, do they?
Oh, it's the toughest job. Yeah. Toughest job out there is being a parent, for sure.
Toughest, but one of the most rewarding, too. It's worth it. It's worth it. I was with my daughter this morning. She called me. She gets migraines once in a while, and she had a doozy, and it wasn't getting any better. And I'd been over there she's 27, so she's not even a child, right? But she works for me. But I always say, you know, this company and this job is because we're a family business. My kids before they're my employees, right? I'm mom before I'm anything else. And so when they call me and they need me, everything else gets put aside because I'm mom first, right? And she'd been struggling with this migraine, and I thought she just had a flu bug or something. And we ended up in the ER this morning, and she got, you know, an IV cocktail and all of that to help. It's not the first time that we've had to do that, but, you know, it gets to the point where that migraine is beyond what we can do at home, you know, and beyond the, and it's all mechanical for her. It's not like, it's just musculoskeletal and just anyway. So, you know, this morning at 7 o'clock in the morning, throwing my clothes on, running out the door, my husband took her dogs and brought them to the house, and we went to the ER and got her, and I had a podcast scheduled at noon, and I'm like, am I going to make it or am I not? Am I going to reschedule or am I not? You know, you just have to be your parent first, right? You're a parent first, and you love your kids. And, you know, so I try to let her do and, you know, make choices. She's an adult. She doesn't need her mom, but she does need her mom. You know, she doesn't need her mother. She needs her mom. So I totally get it. It's such a balancing act. And it doesn't matter what age they are. You're a mom, you're a dad, from the moment they're born until the moment that they leave this earth. And hopefully that's after you. I want my kids to be here long after I'm gone, for sure. So totally get it. Well, that went kind of farther than I wanted it to, but there you go. There it is. Transparency here. But yeah, I love the fact that you care, that you want what's best for your students. And it's evident, Aaron, that you care about your district, you care about what's going on there, and you care about change. And that's a great thing. And the kids, and like I said before, the kids and the teachers are gonna win because you're fighting that battle right now. So keep it up.
Thank you.
And thank you for being on Brighter Together, because, you know, it's been a great conversation, and we truly are brighter together, aren't we?
Yes, absolutely. And it was my pleasure.
Thank you.